Hello, Dale speaking. This is India.
Dale speaking. This is Rue.
Dale speaking. This is Amber.
Ring, ring. Dale speaking.
Welcome to Radio Dale number 45, an extra spooky episode. It's the Halloween special.
This week in music history, which awesome band had naked wrestlers at their label party?
Pearl Jam's new album, Boom!
The Tech Booze.
A very spooky song.
And in part two, songs that should be Halloween songs, but aren't.
This week in music history, and I'm going to start with Halloween, October 31st, 1974. This is really Halloween-y. Led Zeppelin held the UK launch for their new record label, Swan Song, at Chislehurst Caves, Surrey, England, on Halloween night. Drinks were served by nuns in suspenders, a naked woman lay in a coffin covered in jelly, and naked male wrestlers cavorted in the recesses of the caves. Label mates Bad Company, The Pretty Things, and Maggie Bell also attended. The launch also tied in with the release of The Pretty Things' new album, Silk Torpedo. The label was named after an unreleased Zeppelin instrumental track.
Wow.
Yeah.
Naked, no, what was she? Nuns?
Nuns in suspenders, naked women, and cavorting people.
Cavorting?
Men, wrestlers.
Yeah, I was surprised by that one. November 1st, 1996, U2 set up a video link, again, remember the year, set up a video link to an internet site from their recording studio in Dublin so fans could watch them record their new album. How innovative in 1996, U2.
That's pretty crazy.
I didn't know about that, but I was also like 10, so didn't even know the internet was around.
Did you even know U2 was around?
Yes.
Okay, so you were a super fan. Gotcha.
At 10.
November 2nd, 1995.
Sorry, we kind of forgot about that.
The number one single in Canada was Take That Back for Good. I don't think I know what that song is.
Can we insert a thunderclap there?
Yes.
Number one song in Canada, Take That.
November.
By the way, you didn't know that song?
No.
Okay, ready?
I want
you back. I want you back for good.
I don't know this song.
Something. I want you
back. See, at this point in my life, I was listening to good music.
Whatever.
That was my hipster moment.
I'm going to play it, and you guys will know it. I'm going to interrupt Rue every time.
Every time I get my voice ready to be the count. November 3rd, 1990. Ice Ice Baby by Vanilla Ice became the first rap record to top the U.S. singles chart, later also a U.K. number one single. So that song was huge, and I remember it being huge.
November 4th, 1963.
Do Christopher Lee. Be Christopher Lee.
No, you know what lies beneath. Lord of the Rings, anyone? No? Okay. November 4th, 1963. The Beatles topped the bill at the Royal Variety Show at the Prince of Wales Theatre in London. With the Queen Mother and Princess Margaret in the audience, this was the night when John Lennon made the famous remark, "In the cheaper seats, you clap your hands, the rest of you just rattle your jewelry." The show was broadcast on UK television on November 10th, 1963.
You know, I don't think I've ever heard that quote, but I really like it.
Oh, John Lennon.
It's so real. That's so cool.
November 5th, 1966.
Wait, which vampire are we doing now? In the name of God just happened.
I was trying to be Gollum.
Oh, Gollum. Since when is Gollum from Texas?
The Bama.
Since when does Gollum live in Texas and might own a shotgun?
He might. That's awesome.
He's so scary.
I love that he suddly got a southern accent. It was better than my Christopher Lee.
That's everybody. True. Oh, crap. Now what do I have to do?
Anyway, the Monkees were top of the Billboard singles chart with Last Train to Clarksville, the group's first number one. It was later revealed that due to filming commitments on their TV series, none of the group had played on this or most of the group's early recordings.
Didn't know that they were the Milli Vanilli of the 19, whatever that was,
1960s? Mid-60s?
The Monkees are the Milli Vanilli of the 1960s.
Very good. I don't know how I'm doing.
Thank you, Gollum.
So we've had Gollum, we've had Christopher Lee. Lord of the Rings has entered.
Let's go with...
I was going with Dracula for Christopher Lee, but...
I know, but I don't... He doesn't say anything.
He just speaks deeply.
Exactly.
Okay. So, I should be a vampire, or should I be a completely different thing?
Completely different thing.
Okay.
Be a spider.
Oh! Oh, I like that!
November 6th, 1993. Pearl Jam went to number one on the U.S. album chart with Verses, selling 950,000... 378 copies, making it the highest sales in U.S. album history in 1 week. Now, that's interesting, isn't it, Amber? Why is that interesting?
Segue to This Week on the Charts, where we will be discussing Pearl Jam's new album, Lightning Bolt.
Things are connected.
Insert the thunderclap there.
And this has been This Week in Music History.
With Gollum.
Dracula Saruman.
And a werewolf.
Yay.
And the Count.
And the Count was there too.
Thanks,
as
Count.
Well as Amber, Count. India, and Rue.
And Count Chocula.
And Count Chocula.
Boo.
Boo.
So you introduced yourself as Rue. Why didn't you introduce yourself as Boo?
I'll do it right now. This is Boo, but I have nothing to do with this segment.
Welcome to This Week on the Charts. On the very scary charts. That's how I made it Halloween. Pearl Jam. I've touched on them last week on This Week on the last week's version of This Week on the Charts. And about their new album that they released called Lightning Bolt. They released it last Tuesday. And the album debuted at number one in Canada. And it sold 26,000 copies in its first week in Canada. So I thought I'd take a look at some stuff I researched this week about Pearl Jam and their album Lightning Bolt and how it did in Canada and the US now that we're into the second week of the sales. So here we go. Like I mentioned, Pearl Jam's album sold 26,000 copies in its first week in Canada, bringing it to be the number one album. In the U.S., in its first week, it sold 166,000 copies, again being the number one album. So there's a huge difference right there, and we kind of already know that the U.S. is going to sell that many more copies because the U.S. is just that much bigger. The population is kind of outdoes us there. So this week, now that we're into the second week of sales, in Canada, Pearl Jam's album is now number two, so it didn't stay at number one, and it sold 46,000 copies in its second... Oh, sorry, that's the U.S. In Canada, it sold 6,683 copies in its second week, and it's sitting at number four on the top 200 album charts, so it moved from number one to number four. And then in the States, which I was reading before, sold 46,000 copies in its second week, bringing it to number two on the American Top 200 charts, album charts. So definitely just went down one spot in the States, went down three spots in Canada. Here are some interesting facts. In the US, Lightning Bolt was the smallest debut frame for any Pearl Jam studio release. So this record, although it is number one, was the worst for sales for Pearl Jam. So that kind of opens your eyes to what's happening in the current state of the music industry when it comes to album sales. If Pearl Jam can't beat, you know, their records, then what's happening. Also, this is the largest debut for a rock album since last November, when Philip Phillips' The World from the Side of the Moon sold 169,000 copies. So that just tells you how well rock is doing on the album charts as well. It's mostly dominated by pop, because that's what sells a lot more. That's who's buying albums these days are kids. And kids aren't buying Pearl Jam albums. Fun fact, 10, which was Pearl Jam's second record, I believe, just reached 10 million sales total in February in the US. So I just thought I'd throw that in there. But overall, Pearl Jam is seeing the lowest amount of sales in their career when it comes to first week sales of an album, but they were able to debut number one in Canada and in the US, and they have singles on the radio. So yeah, and next week I'm going to touch on Katy Perry's album because hers debuted this week at number one, and Prism, which is her new album, and there's some really interesting facts I'm going to pay attention to over the next week, and I'll bring that to you then. If you have any questions about Pearl Jam and their album or comments, feel free to throw them at me.
Booyah, everybody. This is Rue, and I have your music tech news. There are three quick stories, so I'll just get through this for you. Very interesting news this week. Number one, Facebook is losing interest among teens, and Twitter is now more popular overall among teens. So teens aren't as enamored with Facebook as they were before. Facebook has lost its crown to Twitter as the most popular social network for American teenagers, according to Piper Jaffray's biannual survey among thousands of U.S. teens. Facebook has actually taken a hit because of this. Their stock slid from $57 to about $47 when this news came out, and they admitted, the CFO, David Ebersman, admitted they did see a decrease in daily users among younger teens. So, interesting news. If you are a band that has a very young audience, or if you're a marketer that's targeting teens, think about Twitter before you think about Facebook. Next up, music tech funding is growing strong, and according to Hypebot.com, Snapverse, which is an iOS app that lets you combine short user clips with choices of licensed music, raised $3.5 million in investments and has announced that they're having major label deals, so they'll have even more music available. Applause, another app, it's a company that used to be known as 955 Dreams. They raised $7.2 million earlier this month to turn their ticketing app into a lifestyle and luxury app. Now, there are some great gains in the music tech world, including Toronto's own Tunezy, that's T-U-N-E-Z-Y. It is based out of Toronto, and it allows artists to sell experiences like meet and greets or dinners or really anything on a socially and fan-driven site. If you go to Tunezy, it's very cool. It has a social element where fans can say what kind of experience they'd love to have with the artist. And then there's a voting system which can push these ideas up to the top, and the artists can choose which ones they want, but they kind of get an idea of what fans want by what's voted up to the top. They can then sell it, so it's also a revenue stream. So music tech, something to very much take a look at, and that's part of the reason why we have the segment in the show. Last, we have more news in the Twitter music soap opera. Now, our first Radio Dale episode, when we switched over around episode 20 from the Dale Speaking Podcast to Radio Dale, we talked about a great new app called Twitter Music that lets you discover music based on its popularity on a social networking site. And it's not just the Kanyes and the Mileys. They have emerging artists who are getting a lot of attention but aren't, say, on the charts. They have the artists that your friends are listening to. So you can kind of see a lot of really cool music. It's a great music discovery app. A recent episode of Radio Dale took the news from Billboard that Twitter Music was dead due to lack of interest. As mentioned in that episode, about 9 days after Twitter Music went out, it had dropped out of the top 150 on the iTunes App Store, and it's basically out of the running at this point. Now, there is news, one that I actually mentioned in the previous episode, and now just seems like common sense. Twitter Music will be integrated into the existing Twitter app as a tab or a separate part of the app where you can pull up music suggestions. They released a statement, Twitter, that notes that this is actually part of a big change coming to the company, and I'm quoting now. Twitter intends to integrate the app into its main feed as one of several topic verticals that the Silicon Valley company intends to build so that it can sell more effectively targeted advertising. Advertising. It's always about advertising. Other verticals, so we have the music one that will act like the Twitter music app, but they'll also have news, TV, and movies. Developing those verticals, sources say, is seen as a key to Twitter's future growth as they look to hopefully raise about $1 billion from their upcoming IPO. So there you go. Expect big changes in your Twitterverse soon. And that has been Music Tech for this week. For today's featured song, we were hoping to find a song that would sort of suit the theme of the episode, but especially the concept of part two. You're going to see that we're going to talk about Halloween music, but it's got a bit of a twist. So we were digging into our back catalog and found that not very many of our artists have done sort of creepy, scary songs, except for one. And it wasn't a Dale Speaking artist, but very close friend to the company, Kit Watson, and her artist, Kieran Strange, submitted, well, I guess we asked, please, if we could play her song Merry Undead Christmas for our Christmas special last year. And because they are so sweet, they of course pass it on with their blessing to play in the podcast. So we figured we'd go back to Kit and see if Kieran has another Halloween-y song. And Kit directed us to another Canadian band from BC. They're a punk band called Kill Matilda. So we are going to feature that on the show again, courtesy of Kit Watson and Kill Matilda. Here's the song Zombie Apocalypse on Radio Dale.
1, 2, 3, 4! Yeah.
Thunderclap.
Yes. Thunderclap.
A witch.
A witch cackle.
Yeah, I was throwing Maggie yesterday and I was like, then we need rattling chains. And then we need, like, a ghost going through. Ooh. And then
music.
Creepy sounds, that's all.
Creepy sounds.
Part two of the Halloween special.
Can you get a job as, like, a voice thing? That's amazing. Like,
you totally redeemed Texas Colin.
Thank you.
Totally. Good witch. And as the witch said, it is now part two, and we're going to talk about Halloween music or scary music. What exactly are we talking about today?
Well, you know, there are different ways that Halloween music can go. There are songs that are, like, for Halloween.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your Monster Mash.
Yeah.
You've got Thriller.
Yep.
You've got Ghostbusters.
Say Halloween by Matt Maxwell.
And then there are some songs that could just be Halloween appropriate. So I wrote a blog about it this week. If you want to check it out, where I listed some radio stations that are most likely to play Halloween songs, and then also songs that just, you know, double for Halloween. So like, Running with the Devil.
Oh yeah.
Feed My Frankenstein. Alice Cooper. The Eagles. Witchly Woman. Songs like that. So you can get really creative. And then there are just songs that are terrifying and you don't ever want to hear ever.
No. Terrifyingly bad and terrifying.
Exactly. Yes. And I think we might touch on those a little bit right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, like all holidays tend to have music. I think there's Home for the Holidays. I think that's actually about Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
that song. And I'm sure there are Easter songs. I'm just pulling that out.
Here comes Peter Cottontail.
I guess that works. Rabbit songs, right?
Sure.
Kids songs.
Yeah.
And, I'm sure there's an Arbor Day song, too.
But we know that the only holiday where radio stations will dedicate their entire playlist to certain songs is Christmas.
It's Christmas. But when I think of holidays with music that's actually tailored for it, I only really think of Halloween and Christmas.
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. like, love songs for Valentine's Day.
That could be
whatever.
Anyway.
It could be any day. We hear enough love songs as it is. But... obviously, like India just said, there are Halloween songs, the Monster Mash, Say Halloween, all these great songs that are actually Halloween songs.
Where Thriller wasn't a Halloween song, but
it became a Halloween song.
Yeah, when everybody, you know, is starting to gear up for Halloween, what's one of the first songs you put on? It's
Thriller. So we thought it would be kind of neat to switch it around a bit, and the title we're doing for this part two is Scary Songs That Should Be Halloween Songs. Aggressive. So these are songs that are actually scary, and they are not Halloween songs. These aren't traditional Halloween songs, but they certainly fit the bill.
Yeah, and I guess it's just why, you know, and it's to each of us, we picked a song that we thought personally was scary. And it may be a song that you go to the club and dance to for all week.
Yeah,
and you're like, this is the best happy song ever. So it's kind of neat to...
You might be depressed.
Yeah.
Suicidal.
You might be a very scary person. But it'd be cool to kind of see what different things that kind of freak out our individual personalities.
Do any of us know each other's songs?
I emailed mine to you this morning.
Did you? I don't know if I read that email.
Erase it from your brain.
Good thing that I didn't read the email.
I know India's.
You know India's?
Because
I hinted at mine, but we haven't really discussed this that much. So this is kind of cool. It's kind of going to be like, it's going to be like Christmas, this Halloween thing.
Yes. So, and quick question maybe before we get started.
Mm.
Why do you think Christmas is the only season that radio stations dedicate their playlists to Christmas music? What is it? Why don't they have a Halloween
playlist? Don't people make more Halloween songs?
Yeah.
Really, as
an artist, why wouldn't you come out? I've got my Halloween single ready. Is it because it's too goofy? Is it because there's not enough money?
Yeah, I think it might be quantity too. There just aren't that many Halloween songs.
No.
So if there had been a run on them and Monster Mash came out and everybody was like, I want to be next, and there was a big run on it, maybe we'd see more of that kind of thing. But
mm-hmm.
Christmas is such a huge holiday.
Yeah.
And there's so many, you have carols.
It's the shopping.
Yeah.
So much money.
There's so much money, but it's also, it had music to start with carols.
Yeah.
And then people started writing non-religious Christmas songs.
Mm-hmm.
And it just ended up with this huge quantity of songs that you can play on the radio.
And one thing at the Christmas season, too, is the advertising. There's so much money in that for the radio stations.
Yeah.
But then we were listening to radio stations around the season, and the Halloween, only Halloween commercial I heard was Value Village, but they used
Thrift Shop.
Well, that's right.
Thrift Shop as their song now, which makes sense, Thrift Shop, Value Village, but not a Halloween song at all. So that's kind of interesting for their ad campaign. They went with a happy sounding, you know, pop song instead of like
an actual
Monster Mash
or something.
So that I found kind of interesting too.
Cool.
So let's, I guess, jump into songs that are not Halloween songs that scare the crap out of us.
Excellent. Shall I begin?
Yes.
Begin, Rue.
Okay. Well, my song is a terrifying song. But if you watch the video with the song, you may never sleep again. And it is. The song is called Rubber Johnny. It's by an artist named Aphex Twin or Aphex Twin, who himself is a terrifying man. I don't know if you've ever seen him, but he's always pictured with a giant grimace smile, usually distorted by computers. His gimmick is that face, his terrifying face, shows up everywhere. So one of his album covers has this beach babe with large bosoms, but she has his face.
Ugh.
There's a whole video where they put, there are a bunch of children, but they all have his face.
Oh, God.
And another neat thing he did was he actually, if you take his song, this one song he wrote, and put it through what's called a spectrogram, which takes the audio and makes it into visual, it prints his face across the screen.
Are you serious?
Oh my God.
So this guy is like, kind of, he's already got the creep thing going on. Rubber Johnny is a song that sounds like...
noises?
Well, it sounds like some sort of demon is trying to rise up from hell. And when he gets up here, he stumbles upon a rave. But the rave is the most terrifying rave you could imagine. We'll play a clip of it. Saying, but as you can hear, Amber was right, it sounds a lot like noise, but I think it's actually kind of a genius song because there's so much going on in it, but in the end you can actually like hear the song in your head. It's not like it's just noise, you're like, what just happened? You actually can kind of piece it together into
right.
like a beginning, middle, and end. But the video portrays this sort of deformed person in a wheelchair who seems to be like completely disconnected from the world until the door shuts and the scientists are no longer there to study him, and that's when he can play. Playing involves shooting lasers, going all over the place, dancing, smushing his face up against things because he's made of rubber, so if he smushes his face up, it kind of distorts his face. He does drugs in the video. There's a point where there's a line of cocaine that's about 10 feet long, and he just runs his nose along it, and it's like crazy video, but it's very disturbing. Spoilers. The chihuahua in the video may be his mother.
What?
At the
I
end,
remember the chihuahua.
He looks at the chihuahua and says, mama. And he kept saying mama, and then the chihuahua showed up, and he looks at the chihuahua and says, mama, and the chihuahua looks back at him, so.
He
creepy
turned
song.
His mom into a chihuahua?
No, I think his mother is a chihuahua.
Oh.
That leaves a whole nother...
extra creep.
Yeah.
Extra creep, but it's nightmare fuel. So if you're the kind of person that is disturbed, don't watch the video. And if you're the kind of person that's sensitive, don't even listen to any more of the song than we played in this episode.
I'm seeing now, I know that I would get freaked out listening to that, but now you've piqued my interest.
When I played 10 seconds of it yesterday, you threw your head back.
This
and said,
was
turn
what
it
that
off,
was?
Turn it off, turn
oh,
it
no,
off.
God, no. No. I didn't realize this was that.
And then we played Vivaldi to
yes,
calm her down.
To calm her down.
Oh, that was so much better.
So that's my selection. Aphex Twin or Aphex Twin, Rubber Johnny.
Wow.
Amber?
My choice was a song that I recently, or that I heard within the past few years, thanks to Perez Hilton, when I used to go to his website. And the band, or the group, duo, is called Justice.
Oh, Justice, cool.
Yes, and they're from France, or from...
Yep, they're from France.
From France. And they're kind of like a, I guess like an electronic type thing.
Yeah, sort of like a French house thing. They're
house,
very close
thank you.
To... they. You would mistake them for a more upbeat, dancey Daft Punk if you weren't paying extra close attention.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they have a song that the title is explains the song, and it's called Stress. So, and the song, when you listen to it, you can be walking down the road and you keep kind of looking behind you because you keep thinking,
wow.
Like, it gives you literally the way they build the song. Just because, again, there's no singing, there's nothing. It's all music. And the way that the song progresses and builds, it makes you feel stressed, for sure. And then it also gives me, like, this feeling of, like, what's around me. And then also, the video, when you watch that, it follows a bunch of, like, these punk kids in France that literally go around and terrorize people.
Really?
And they try to, you know... manhandle a woman in a subway station, they're breaking stuff, they're pushing people in the streets, like they're being punks.
Yeah.
But overall, it gives me this feeling of just when you listen to the song, it gives me
like
a feeling of discomfort, which I find at the end that
an anxiety.
It's, that it scares me that a song can do that. And it all, like, it's just an creepy song. So, and the video too adds to it, and that's what I saw first because Perez Hilton referred to it. And I opened it and watched it and went, whoa.
It's really cool when a music video can actually get a real emotion out of you rather than just, this is neat.
Yeah.
Or I'm in love or I'm happy. It's actually like something hardcore like
that.
Well, because
the song, the video is like young kids doing pretty bad things, and then that makes you angry. And then when you listen to the song on its own, again, it just gives you this feeling of like, ugh, like
crazy.
Yeah. So
emotions are so interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
So
really
that's my choice. And hopefully from the clip, you'll be able to kind of get an idea of that and download it if you think it's something you want to get more familiar with and feel stressed.
Note, Justice's other music is ridiculously fun and happy.
Yeah.
Everything they do is about dancing and joy.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's a song called Dance.
Dance.
D-A-N-C. But then you listen to Stress.
That's cool, though. I like when artists can completely step out. And the fact that they could pull a visceral emotion when what they usually do is make you dance, that's really cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So that's my choice. India.
Oh, so this, my song, I just had the most terrible experience with it. When I first heard it, I thought that it was, like, creepy and just terrifying. And then the night after the first time that I heard it, I had the most demonic dream where there were entities in my bedroom, like coming, trying to kill me, trying to take me to hell. They were cutting me. Like, I literally woke up and thought that I had blood and was, like,
really
tortured. And I called my mom crying because I was so afraid of this. And I think it's a pretty popular song that most people like. And I don't know the name of it, but it is that one by Skrillex with the girl screaming. Oh. This one. I can't imagine, you know, it's you were both talking about music videos,
yeah,
which is really interesting, but I'm not really a fan of music videos to begin with, but and I don't know what the music video for that Skrillex song is.
It's horrifying.
I can only imagine it being horrifying, but I'm not sure if it would be as horrifying as my nightmare was.
Is it Bangarang?
No. It's Scary Monsters and Nice Sprite. So there you go.
Okay.
That's Halloween-y.
Yeah,
totally.
Okay. So totally Halloween appropriate. Skrillex, Scary Monsters, and Nice Sprites.
And I just learned that I confused the video with another one.
Yeah. So there was no video for that, but there doesn't need to be.
Because it's scary enough on its own.
Overall, it's terrifying. Yeah. And it's... That's
Dubstep
a very
kind of
intense...
has a terrifying feel to it in general.
Like, if you were locked in a room in the dark and
yeah,
that came on, I totally hear you. That is... That I would not want
to
be alone with that
song. They should play it in haunted houses almost, really.
It would cause you to panic.
Yeah.
It's much like what I was saying. Like, it gives you this feeling of, like, panic and anxiety because there's so much happening.
But is that us? Because obviously there's a generation or
yeah,
a group of people that...
Get joy out of it.
Dubstep, as far as I've been able to, because you can't dance to it. Some people say they can, but they're not. Somebody said I danced to it, and they just stomped a bit. But it's the bass is what affects you. It's not even really the song. It's just the noise and the bass.
The drugs that people are on.
Oh yeah, totally.
Well, when the song starts, it sounds a bit happier. It's like and then it's like and then all of a sudden
this is me doing dubstep.
India's dubstep was well, that's interesting that between the three of us, like, they all are kind of the same genre.
Yeah.
They're all electronic.
Electronic, yeah, in some sense. Like, we didn't pick, like, a Celine Dion song.
Although they are terrifying.
Horrifying thing I've ever heard. But it's interesting that doing our own thing and then coming back to
yeah,
do the podcast, we've all picked an electronic song.
Yeah. Now, do you think that guitars and orchestras and stuff, just they're too cheesy to be scary?
I think Pink Floyd did a good job with...
It's true.
With some pretty scary stuff.
Yeah.
And though, but a lot of those too are sound effects from different instruments. It's not just straight up playing a guitar
yeah,
with, you know, normal effects on it. They did some creepy stuff.
Yeah.
Lyrically,
like,
too, I think
yeah,
there's songs out there that scare. There's one actually, it's called Friends of Mine by the Guess Who.
Mm.
And throughout, he's singing, and then all of a sudden it breaks down to a part where he starts reciting. Like, it's about death and
mm,
what happens to a man. Like, a black-cloaked figure casts him down, and then his body is picked apart by birds. And then, like, it's... And it, but it's Burton Cummings, like...
Intensely.
Like, intensely, almost. And then he starts yelling and screaming. That gives... Like, I get chills right now. When
yeah,
I heard that on the radio on, like, Q107 one night... And I was like, what in the name of God is this? I also find Riders of the Storm,
yep,
Riders on the Storm, by The Doors. That's very creepy as well. And the
yeah,
thunder and the rain in the background.
Well, Jim Morrison did think that he was possessed, so.
Right.
That's true. I actually have a couple to add. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I only have the name of one of the albums, but there's an artist out there called Plastic Man. His real name is Richie Houghton. He's a Canadian producer. And he did a couple of albums. One was called Consumed, and it was a concept album where you had just been swallowed by something and you're now passing through its body. And what you're hearing is what you would hear while passing through its body, but it's like electronic music.
You're being digested.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there was another album. I wish I could remember the name. I'll cut it in here or something. But it's supposed to be you're stuck in a man's mind as he slowly goes insane. But it's all like music. It's all like beats and noises. Wow. But you hear his inner monologue and stuff. And that's, he has these albums like that. So they're very creepy as well. So that's sort of an honorary mention.
That's scary.
Yeah. Well, that's a scary show.
But that's so interesting. That is just so different from what you normally hear. Like, here's my songs 1 to 12. And
yep.
This one's about this and this one's about that, which is fine.
Yeah.
But to hear that someone actually sits down and makes an album based on
a proper
being digested
album.
By something. Like,
not like somebody writing a bunch of songs about a character who's living in California. So it's like, the concept is it's somebody in California. It's actually like you're being swallowed by something. Here
or
are
you're
the songs.
Going and here's what
or
it's like
going
to be
insane.
So insane.
Insane, yeah.
Yikes.
Well, there you have it.
That was a very scary episode.
It was.
Halloween special.
The garland just fell. And if you have scary songs in your mind that we missed, send them to us.
Yeah, we want to know what songs scare you that aren't Halloween songs. So please tweet them or Facebook them or whatever. That would be really cool to kind of get an idea of what,
what scares you.
Yeah.
We want to know what scares you so we can use it against
this
you.
This is like a therapy session. Talk about it. It made me feel better.
Excellent. Well, as long as we're all feeling better, we've done good.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
We're going to eat chocolate now and...
I guess this could be an outro. Let's just do the outro.
Okay.
You can find Dale Speaking at dalespeaking.com. We are Dale_Speaking on Twitter and Dale Speaking on Facebook. Talk to us there. Booed in your booty. Ooh, that sounded wrong. It was supposed to be body.
I was like, why are you saying booty?
It was supposed to be body, but I was booing. I bootied.
Put some
booty. Your booty.